Well, there's actually a lot of research in this area because people are becoming very interested in how the body works, how to make it work better. And the book is really a synthesis of everything that I've learned in writing a weekly column for the New York Times about exercise science. Sort of what do we know and what do we not know about how the body works well?
Okay, and my take is that you are interested in this, but you're not a scientist yourself.
I'm an English major, which I think actually makes me sort of the ideal person to study this because I have to ask the really dumb questions. I have to ask the scientists, what does this mean? What does it mean for our lives? How can we put this to work in our lives? And they've been very, very helpful in answering my questions.
Okay.
There's actually been just a burst of science related to exercise science in the last 2 to 3 years. And part of that is because scientists have been able to get funding, and also because we have whole new methods of looking inside the body now with different types of MRI machines, with what are called functional MRI machines that can actually look inside the brain and see activity within the brain, not just the structure of it. Similarly, they can look inside the heart. They can look inside cells. They can see what's going on inside the body in a way that's never been possible before. So some of what I describe is historical. What did we think, say, 30 years ago? And now, what do we think now based on the very latest science?
And I was struck by that because you described some experiments on mice, but then you say recently what has been done by actual people or looking at actual people.
It's interesting because in studying exercise, most of the first round of studies will be done on animals. And for better or worse, they make good subjects because mice and rats actually respond to exercise very much like people do. However, they can only do certain kinds of exercise. You can't get mice to ride bikes. Mice also hate swimming. So swimming is used to study stress in mice. The best thing that you can do with animals is have them run because they like running. And for most rodents, running on a wheel is very much like walking for people. It's not really strenuous. So you can get a pretty good approximation of what would happen within people if you get rodents to run on a running wheel for, say, 30 minutes.
Okay, so let's talk about the title of the book, The First 20 Minutes. What does that mean?
First 20 minutes is very good news, by the way. The biggest finding, in my opinion, from all of the recent exercise science is that you don't need to do very much to get a whole lot of benefit. Americans are really, really sedentary. We are the most sedentary society that has ever existed. A third of Americans get no exercise at all. And so what physiologists and other exercise scientists are finding is that if you have been really sedentary and you just get up off the couch, you start moving for, say, 20 minutes, just walking, just very light exercise, you get profound physiological benefits. Just within the first 20 minutes of moving around, you start to reduce your risk of heart disease, diabetes, and dementia. And if you keep that up, even at a very low level, if you just walk 20 minutes or 30 minutes most days of the week, you will get most of the health benefits of exercise. You don't have to run marathons. You don't have to run at all. You just have to move a little bit.
Okay. And talk about standing, because that surprised me that standing could do anything for you.
Standing is actually profoundly powerful. The human body is built to be moving. And even if the movement is very slight, even if it literally is standing up, you start having the big muscles in your body, the muscles in your legs and back, contract. And that causes physiological changes in your body that reduce the amount of blood sugar that's moving around through your blood. That reduces your chance, your risk of diabetes. It reduces the amount of fat that flows to your heart and your liver. It reduces the chance of dementia. So just standing up every 20 minutes increases health, reduces your chance of dying prematurely.
Okay. We've had various things that they have said will reduce dementia, and it's been hard to disprove or to prove because it takes a long time to find out if anyone has dementia and whatever. Do you think this will stand? Do you trust it?
I do, actually, that there have been some pretty persuasive studies of whether walking, very small amounts of activity, reduce the risk of dementia in people who have a genetic predisposition to Alzheimer's, and the evidence is really clear that it does. They have done pretty large studies with people who have a familial, a genetic predisposition to developing Alzheimer's. If those people walk, they don't have to do anything more. If they walk, they have a much lowered risk of actually going on to full Alzheimer's. And if they start to develop some of the memory loss, if they continue to walk, then the progression of the disease is much slower than in people who do not. So it seems very persuasive that exercise will reduce the risk for dementia.
Okay. I guess that kind of leads us to loneliness, my note on loneliness. And you talked about a finding that about loneliness, especially in women involved with exercise.
What's interesting is how complicated the effects of exercise are on the body and the brain. It's really interesting how exercise affects both emotions and physiology in the body, and they become intertwined. And what they found in female rats, which are very social, that they want to be with other animals, if they take them and put them in cages by themselves and then have them run on running wheels, they get very few of the benefits of exercise. Whereas if they house those rats, those same female rats, with other rats, effectively they have a training group, if they then run, then they get lots of benefits from exercise. So the implication is that there is an emotional component to exercise, and particularly for women.
Okay. Well, I guess we should talk about stress, too, because you have a whole section of the book talking about exercise and stress.
Exercise is actually one of the most powerful ways to affect mood. There have been really interesting studies showing that exercise increases the number of brain cells in a portion of your brain that's very clearly tied to mood. People who have major depression almost always have a smaller portion of their brain called the hippocampus. If you exercise, you will get new brain cells in that section of the brain in particular. And it's been shown that people with depression who can manage to exercise almost always get greater benefit even than people who are on antidepressant drugs. It also, exercise very clearly decreases people's anxiety levels. And scientists think that's because exercise is itself a kind of stress. So if your body gets used to that stress, you get some of the same stress-related hormones, physiological responses of being, say, on deadline. But you get used to them. The body learns how to respond. And so then when you have emotional stress, you have that deadline, people almost always respond better if they've been exercising.
That's really exciting. I'm talking to Gretchen Reynolds, and we're talking about her book, The First 20 Minutes, Surprising Science, reveals how we can exercise better. Let's talk about weight loss, and that's something that everyone is thinking about these days. And I was sort of partway through the book when I realized that you were talking about exercise and health. And then you got to the part about weight loss, and you found that there are some things we believe that aren't true.
Well, exercise has a very complicated relationship to weight loss. And many of us, including me, want exercise to make us skinny. And the best, newest science suggests that in and of itself, and especially for women, exercise won't make you skinny. What often happens, and this is especially true for women, is that moderate exercise, something like a walk, tends to increase the amount of of appetite hormones that your body produces afterwards. And most scientists think that's probably because in evolutionary terms, women needed to maintain a certain amount of fat so they could give birth. So we developed a very exquisitely well-tuned mechanism for maintaining our weight, which unfortunately can kick in after exercise. So you cannot expect that going for a 30-minute walk means that you can have 5 or 6 donuts. You still have to look at calories in and calories out. And if you combine a regular exercise program with diet, with cutting your calories, you will lose weight. And then what is very strongly proven is that exercise will help you to maintain the weight loss. If you lose weight and continue to exercise, your body seems to think you should stay at that lower weight and you will not regain. Mm-hmm. But in and of itself, it won't be enough, exercise by itself.
Okay. What about the idea that some people are talking about of tricking your metabolism? I don't know, you make your body think something else.
Well, there's a very strongly entrenched myth that if you exercise, you then get afterburn, which means that you effortlessly burn more calories or fat for the rest of the day, that you bump up your metabolism. And unfortunately, that appears to not be true if the exercise is really moderate, if it's a walk. That does not seem to increase your metabolism. You won't burn more calories through the rest of the day. If you can manage to exercise much more intensively, if you can go for a run, and probably about a 45-minute run, it's not a small amount of exercise, then the science suggests you do get some afterburn. You do actually increase the number of calories you burn and the amount of body fat that you burn for about 24 hours. But again, that's only if you exercise pretty vigorously.
Okay. Let's talk about exercise in the brain. You have a whole section of the book on that.
That's what keeps me exercising. This may be the area that is almost most profound in exercise science right now. It wasn't very long ago that most of us were taught, and most scientists believed, that you were born with a certain number of brain cells and you would never have more. You could kill them off by drinking, but that was about the only thing you could do. But we now know very clearly that you do keep creating brain cells throughout your life, and exercise will double or even triple the number of brain cells that you create, and especially in the brain centers that are related to memory and learning. Those areas shrink. After you're about 30, the hippocampus in your brain starts to shrink pretty dramatically. And you do, even if you have no dementia, most of us start having more trouble remembering. We can't remember names. We can't remember where we put our car keys. That's all your hippocampus. If you exercise, you will maintain the size of your hippocampus for a much longer period of time. You will create a lot more brain cells there. And the science is really strong. You will do better in terms of your memory and your ability to learn. And all you have to do is go for a walk. There was a really interesting study, it was actually published last year, in which they had a group of 60 and 70-year-old people, men and women, walk for 30 to 45 minutes a day, about 4 times a week, I think, for a year. And at the end of the year, their hippocampal volume, the size of their hippocampus, was much larger than in a group of the same people the same age who did not walk. And they performed much better on tests of memory and of their ability to learn. And the only difference was that they walked.
Okay. Do you have anything more about aging besides the brain that exercises, why it's important?
Well, a really important thing is that it seems to change your DNA pretty significantly. One of the things that exercise has been found to do is change the length of these very small caps on the end of your DNA, which are thought to help the DNA when it divides, when the cells divide. It keeps the DNA healthy. So exercise actually increases the length of these little caps on the end of your DNA. So when it divides, you get less cell damage. So there's pretty clear evidence that, in effect, your cells, almost every cell in your body, is younger, biologically younger, if you exercise. And it also has been found to reduce the risk of cancer that is related to cell division. And again, that's from a very small amount of exercise. They have found increases in the length of those caps on DNA just if people go for walks.
It seems as though this is really the time, the age, for doing this kind of research, and it seems as though there are a lot of people who are involved with it. What do you think is going to be the next area? What's going to be the next finding?
Well, I think the next area will be to really try and figure out why we can't get people to exercise more. It's really a little strange that we are learning so much about the benefits of exercise. It's cheap, it's easy, you don't need a pill, you don't need much equipment, but very few people in America do it regularly. And so one of the big areas of research is actually why, and what can we do to get people to exercise more? One thing is potentially pay them, which is being tested in some cities, or you reduce the amount that people pay for their insurance premiums. You hand out running shoes. You try and get kids involved, because there's really good research that the peak of activity in America is generally achieved at about age 7. And from there on, it's downhill. Mm-hmm. And for teenagers, it just drops off a cliff, especially for girls. Boys are inactive as teenagers. Girls are just couch potatoes. And it's not clear why. It's not completely clear what we can do to convince people that this changes your life. It makes you live longer, makes you live a more healthy life. It means you pay a lot less for healthcare costs throughout your life, and still people don't do it. So I think one of the big areas of research is finding ways to get people to move.
Okay. There are several areas in the book where you have lists, you know, 5 things to do or something like that. Can you kind of go over those in your mind and leave our listeners with a list of what they should do?
Well, the first is consider setting some sort of alarm in your office or home so that every 20 minutes you stand up. Mm-hmm. That's actually really easy and makes a huge difference in health. And you can find apps online for your computer or your cell phone that will just beep at you every 20 to 30 minutes. Stand up, walk around the room. It will, with that one thing, change your life. Then things like garden. Things like, don't think of activity as just exercise. Think of it as simply trying to move more. You don't have to get all of your exercise in one block. The science is very clear about that, that if you don't have a half an hour, then try and walk for 10 minutes. Try and walk in place for 10 minutes. If you do that 3 times during the day, you seem to get the same physiological benefits as if you walk for 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. Be reasonable about your diet. Don't obsess about low fat, low carb, any of those things. There's very little evidence that any of those particular diets work better than others. Just think calories in, calories out. And rethink what you're trying to do with exercise. So many people start and then quit. Whereas if you think of exercise as a way to make yourself healthy for the rest of your life, then all you have to do is a little bit and you will be healthier. Okay. One very interesting finding of a number of the most recent studies of health and fitness is that if you have to pick, and I'm not suggesting that you pick one or the other, but if you have to choose whether to lose weight or to become fit, then become fit. Because there's very clear evidence that if you're fit, if you have a reasonably high aerobic capacity, even if you're overweight, you will have much less risk for heart disease or premature death, diabetes, cancer. They have found in a number of studies of both men and women that middle-aged people who gain weight but exercise do not have much risk, well, have less risk of developing heart disease. And that's most true in women. So it's a really profound finding.
And the difference between what you do to be fit and what you do to lose weight is, to be fit, you can do the 20 minutes and it can be moderate exercise. To lose weight, you really have to do something intensive.
Yes, basically. You can be fit by just moving around quite a bit. To lose weight, you are going to have to exercise a lot and cut calories back a lot. If you don't think you can do that, then by all means, just move.
How about age? Is there a point where there's no point in starting?
Absolutely not. They've done some really interesting studies with 80-year-olds in which they found that even if they'd been sedentary all through their life until that point, if they got up and started doing very, very moderate walking, they developed more muscle mass, they developed more speed, they developed better aerobic fitness, and all of that within 6 weeks. So there is no age cutoff, and the benefits will accrue no matter what age you are, and they will probably help you live longer.
Well, this certainly is optimistic. I'm talking to Gretchen Reynolds about her book. The first part of the title is The First 20 Minutes. I can see why it's on the bestseller list. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. And if anyone is interested, I will be doing a reading in Santa Fe on June 11th at Collected Works at 6 p.m.
Good. Thank you.